Welcome back to Mangum Reads. We are the, I don't know, older sibling of Pottering Around, of the more prolific Pottering Around, we'll say. My name is Sarah. I am here with my co-host, BJ. BJ, we are back on short stories.
Yeah, we are back on short stories. I'm really excited to do this. This was probably one of my favorite bits of Mangum Reads, where we covered sort of the Hugo Nebula world fantasy, sort of all those little short stories. And so we get like a little bite size of everything. And rather than a whole novel to, you know, spend like three or four episodes to cover, we just did an amuse-bouche, as it were.
An amuse-bouche, yeah. And here on Mangum Reads 2.0, the rebooted Mangum Reads, we, for the record, are not doing three episode arcs on a single novel anymore either, but I am glad that we are back on the short story. So we have two today that are Hugo. One is a Hugo and Nebula Award winner for two different years, right? It's 2022 and 2023, did you say?
So, yeah, there's like a weird adjacency between Hugo and Nebula. Mm-hmm. So Nebula comes out the year before Hugo, I guess, in the timeline. You know, I don't know the exact month, but basically this one, the 2021 Nebula Award for Best Short Story, and then went on to win the Hugo for the same category. It'd be really, really funny, and I'd love to look this up, if like some of the awards like classify novellas or novelettes like and short stories slightly differently.
Oh, yeah,
or does everybody have the same definition?
Yeah, you might end up in a different category based on the criteria. Yeah. So we've got one that's a winner for both.
Yes.
And then another one that was cross-listed on both shortlists.
Right. So the cross-list is for the Nebula 2022 and then the Hugo 2023, mm-hmm. Which is DIY by John Wiswell.
Yes. And the winner of both is Where Oaken Hearts Do Gather by Sarah Pinsker.
Yes.
I've got pinking shears in my head, I think, is what's going on.
I feel like we've read something else. Oh, she did Two Truths and a Lie.
Oh, okay. That is way back in the archive somewhere. I could tell you an episode number, but I don't know.
Exactly. So that was 2020, and that was a lot of fun. That was where we made a lot of fun of Spencer, because it was low-hanging fruit.
As we do. We'll get Spencer back on the podcast at some point. So some other interesting like crossovers in these two stories, though, is we here have two stories that are like weirdly about internet forums. We are dealing with the intersection of sort of fantasy and internet culture.
And also a little bit of horror.
A
lot of horror and a little bit of horror, depending on how you feel about sort of corporate overlords kind of deal. That seems a little hard to me. It seems like a little post-apocalyptic
corporate
takeover. I feel like that's usually I don't know if that's always classified as horror. I also feel like post-apocalyptic fiction is also not classified as horror, which is kind of funny.
That is kind of funny. I think it depends on what happens in the post-apocalyptic setting.
Yeah.
There might be some crossover, but it's not like an automatic.
Yeah. I think that horror feels like it needs to kind of be in the shadows. Like you don't really know what's going on, but it's scary, as opposed to you know what's going on and it is scary.
And you can't really do anything about it, which is, yeah.
Yeah.
That feels like an okay distinction to me. Let's roll with that. I'm sure that there are very technical definitions that we could get into,
yes.
And that is not what we are here for.
That isn't.
So I think we're going to start with Where Oaken Hearts Do Gather.
Yeah, I mean, chronological order is one of the easiest orders to just, you know, dive into. So
I will say, BJ, you sent me the links to these stories, and I opened up Where Oaken Hearts Do Gather first and just started scrolling through trying to figure out where the story started. And it took me an embarrassingly long amount of time to realize that there was not like an additional link that I was missing or anything like that. We were in the story. So we're going to talk about BJ warned me before we started recording.
I told you this in confidence. That's a lie.
Like we were not broadcasting this out to the world.
Yes.
BJ warned me before we started recording that I was going to have to do some of the heavy lifting on liking this story.
Well, yeah. I guess it's not that I didn't like this story. So we've talked in the past about really enjoying non-traditional storytelling methods.
Yeah, and so just as a sort of like a quick overview, we're not going to do like the entire plot like we used to do necessarily, or not a beat by beat summary, but the premise of this story is that it takes place in the essentially like annotation section of some sort of website like Rap Genius or something like that.
Yeah.
Where we have a traditional English folk ballad where oak and hearts do gather round, that the story takes place in the annotations that a sort of group of five or six like diehard fans or diehard users of this site anyway, are going through as we go through. And so they're responding both to the lyrics in some very particular personas, and they're responding to each other at different points too.
Yeah.
And so this sort of like, we've got essentially a story happening in the marginalia.
Yeah, which I have a lot of appreciation for. And like this kind of reminds me of A Guide to Working Breeds, which was sort of like a help desk kind of thing. We also had...
What was the cloud one?
The cloud one.
Oh, we had something about different types of clouds.
Yes. So that was, A Catalog of Storms.
Yes.
I think, but like, so, and then there was one, about, it was, now I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It was, a bunch of different entries over a time period about like a historical event. About like women interacting, and I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember what that was called, but that was one of my favorites that we've read. So it is, in fact, embarrassing that I can't remember.
10 excerpts from an annotated bibliography on the cannibal women of Retinabar Island.
Yes, that's right. And shocking that I didn't remember that title in full.
Yeah.
But that's what this reminds me the most of.
So the reason that I figured that you might really like this, but for me, this was the sort of logical conclusion of like leaning all of the way into that type of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it, I think, because it felt like if you could skim it correctly, it was like a fun way to go through the story, but like it's hard to skim correctly. And so there's just a lot of stuff that like I have to slow down to read. And so it was very jarring in that way, in the way that 10 excerpts wasn't.
Yeah.
Where like pretty much like all of the non-important stuff was sort of mostly citation, and everything in the story that was told in this excerpt type of way and like historical reporting type of way was important to the story. Whereas I feel like this felt a lot more like getting the titles of the citations and then like you had stuff in there. And so I also, maybe it was also like I felt it was a little bit of a disservice to the short story to just ignore a lot of like basically everything else around it. Because, like, the trappings are sort of there for a reason.
Right.
It was just, it was too much for me.
Yeah, I can see that. So the way that this story works is it goes through, you know, it goes through the lyrics, and they're, as we've said, they're annotated, but it goes through the lyrics of Where Oak and Hearts Do Gather, which essentially tells the story of a girl who goes to meet her love. Where oak and hearts do gather. Although there is a lot of chatter in the comments, right, about who this is and who she's going, like what kind of assignation this is, who is really at fault here. At which point, when they meet, she sort of tests him, also in ways unclear and argued over in the comments. But whether it's because he failed the test or it is the test, she does in fact pluck his heart out. And
yep, And maybe plant a seed.
Plant a seed, or is a seed
acorn
planted? Or... Unclear.
Yeah.
But the broken, or the sort of husk of his body, then goes back to the village, and the villagers hang him because they figure out he's not
him
really maybe? Alive. Yeah. Also unclear
because he can't talk.
Because he can't talk. Is he under a spell? This is also discussed in the comment section. And then the villagers also then decide to go wreak havoc on the forest for what it has done to him and cut down all of the oak trees. Anyway, it's sort of a wild, I meant to go back and listen to the song.
I started listening to it. And
Which version did you start listening to? This seems
the one that
important.
Was, there was only one linked.
There was only one linked. Yeah. And that was,
And Moby, I think maybe? That, and then there was like a Moby weird K-Dick, ukulele cover.
Yeah.
So there's the Stalking Horses that was linked, that has been viewed 8,133 times.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a wild thing that's in the really world.
I am excited to go back and listen to the Jack White and the Decemberists versions. Those are my college experience in a nutshell, if anyone would like to do the math on how old that makes me now.
And so the other thing that I kind of like, and I was trying to figure out, is the top comment is, as much as I love the Metallica version, I got to say this just hits different and I can't get over it.
Mm.
I absolutely love this. And I did a quick Google and I was like, wait a minute, this... I'm confused. This doesn't seem like a thing.
Do all of these exist? That was what I didn't know when looking at it either. Are these real?
I don't think they are.
Okay.
I think that this is maybe like in my head, is this like short story kayfabe? Like what is what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is just people buying into the story and adding to the wildness. Especially because
you mean as far as by people, you mean the commenters that are our characters?
Yes.
Okay.
Partially because there's an angry man that says, I'd like to invite some of you to come help empty our dishwasher if you've got nothing better to do. And so... is just angry that people are commenting and confusing other people, which is kind of great, and is kind of wild. So this feels like, and it would have been interesting to interact with it this way, but like this kind of feels like it could have been a cool interactive experience. And I feel like that's sort of what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like you sort of like hunt down like what... if there was a way to like be pointed to clicking links that give you the story sort of in like maybe a little bit more chronological order or something like that, that would have been, I think that might've been a little bit of my pullback of the, like, this just doesn't feel like the right format for what's going on here.
I think that that's fair. I think that's fair criticism. And I think that it is a story that is a little bit, as much as I enjoyed reading it and liked it, and like think what it's doing is kind of cool. And I love things that do these kind of formal differences and find interesting ways to like create characters through shorthand and do some kind of stuff like that.
Yes.
I think that's super interesting. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I do think that fundamentally, and I felt this while reading this again this morning, it is, I think it's gotten a little too cutesy with the form. It's relying on the premise of the form too much. And so I think it loses some, like, it loses, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, because anyone who has listened to anything we have put out related to books before knows that I don't care about plot, but it has sort of lost the plot here. And gets a little too, like, I think that, Pinsker, sorry, I have to now think consciously about her name. I think she gets a little bit in her own head, in her own way about what these comments are doing. And a lot of them do feel sort of throwaway or just trying to create the characters when I think there's more you could be doing with them, I think is my point.
Yeah. This
go ahead.
I was going to say, so this reminds me of the molecular gastronomy push, where it was a really cool thing. There were some really interesting ideas. There's stuff that people still do.
Yeah.
But like, there was a certain point in time where, like, what is what you're getting good, or is it technically interesting?
Right. And I think that this is technically interesting. I think that there are some good things about it. But I do think that there's just some like weirdness in the foam. I don't.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
And I will
say, you microwave the foam and it's fine, but
did we really need to do it that way?
Yeah. You know,
the thing when I was reading it that I was like, ooh, something has gone a little bit wrong here, or this should be your clue if you are a writer that you are not confident in what you've done and that you probably need to go back and do something, is that we get like midway through the story, one of our commenter characters having to explain, like going back and explaining who everyone is.
Yeah.
So we get this comment from Dynamum when he's in his like outburst with Barrow Boy, who is just there kind of trolling him essentially. And kind of down in the comments, he says, I love this song, but it's also fascinating. A lot of songs are straightforward, but I love the ones like this that develop a sort of detective team, which is a weird phrase to use in the first place. We've got Bonnie Lass with all the background history stuff, and Henry the dashing young fieldwork expert, and DJ with random facts, and Grail with musicology, and Rihanna Anonymous on language details. A great screen name. But
yeah,
I felt like you're halfway through the story and you feel the need to recap this for people.
Yeah.
Something has gone awry here.
I also feel like there was like one layer too deep for it being a short story. Because this is like a semi-murder mystery in a song, and then in the comments people find out about a professor that researched the song that then disappeared, and then one of those people that was following up on the research of the researcher then disappeared, and it's just like,
see, I think I see what you're saying. I didn't mind that part so much because I thought, like, frankly, I thought that the stuff with Henry doing the documentary and going to the village was the most interesting part of the plot in the first place, and I knew as soon as he said he was going there that this was exactly what was going to happen. So also the story wasn't surprising, which is its own sort of problem. But I thought for me, the most interesting and the strongest part of the story was the discussions around the possibility of this being a repeating story, that the reason that this has become a song that has appeared in so many different places, has so many kind of different, similar yet slightly tweaked iterations, and it seemed to move all over the world, might have something to do with like the magic behind, like maybe there's something going on here that we then see was probably reflected in real life. We should probably saw that play out is one of the implications. I kind of liked, like that worked for me.
That part 100% worked for me. And I feel like because of how the story was set up and how some things went in there, we got so little of that.
Yes, that's yes.
And it feels like I don't know. It takes some of the like, oh, this is a cool story punch out of it.
Yeah.
Because like
the cool part,
you have
to
pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, and B, like it becomes slightly buried in such a minor part, and then it ends. Like, so I don't know.
I think we could have dealt with one less commenter. If you could have like given, I feel like you could have given like Rihanna Anonymous's language stuff, which didn't add much to me, for me to begin with. You could have given that to like Bonnie Lass or something like that. And then you might have had like some more space for the real thrust of this story to breathe a little bit more. Because like, while the sort of infighting and back and forth in the comments is true to the form, and I think this is what we're what we're kind of getting at, right? Is that like this feels like a comment section. Like it feels authentic.
Yes. And it is about as hard to read as the authentic comment section.
Yeah. And so it feels like actually to make this work as a story, you have to pull back on the form a little bit And we'll give you, I as a reader would give you a little leeway on, well, this is a little more, hangs together a little narratively well for every comment section I've ever seen. But I'd give you that to have a little bit more of an actual narrative here as opposed to something that looks authentically like a comment section.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing is, like, I just, how it's consumed. Like, I get, well, actually, I don't know. Uncanny Magazine might actually still be a magazine.
I don't know. They have, I have it pulled up. Let me go see if I can find it real fast.
Like,
but go ahead.
You can click on a lot of the hyperlinks for, like, the, from, like, the song itself, and it'll take you to the comments, and then the comments are just sort of there.
Right.
But, like, and then there's the discussion, but I feel like, so that part, it feels like that is best written for the physical publication version.
Yeah.
Or, like, rather, or maybe even a Kindle version, but not, like, reading it on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, there's sort of, like, that, like, you know, is this the best way to have formatted it? And that's not on the writer per se.
Right.
But I feel like it kind of is on the, if you were essentially doing editorial type work to make your story work.
Right.
I think that the writer needs to make sure, like, have an idealized conception of it, and maybe needed to work with Uncanny Magazine, right, like whatever it is, like this feels like it could have come across a little bit better and been a more easily consumable thing. This feels like when the chef comes out and tells you how to eat the dish, and you're just like,
I shouldn't have to.
I get
told.
It sometimes, yeah. But like,
yeah, I agree with that. It does not appear to. I could be wrong, but from a quick look, it doesn't look like Uncanny Magazine is a physical magazine anymore.
Sure.
But I do think I think you're right. I didn't have a huge problem reading it and following it once I figured out that was what I was supposed to be reading on the page.
Right. So,
but I do think that it would have been, if you're really leaning into that form, it would have been nicer to have it either like completely mimic that form, which I realize is a big ask for, you know, for publishing it even digitally, or at least to do a layout that is a little closer to or even have, like, I would have, let me make sure they're not in there before I say this, what I would have liked would be timestamps for these, so that if I really wanted to figure out, like, what the chronological order of when people knew what was, I'm not sure I would have, but it would have been nice to have that option. Because there is a point at, and I don't know exactly where it is, but there's a point maybe a third of the way through the story, half the way through the story, when they're talking about the documentarian Henry going missing, not being on, you know, not having commented for a year.
Yes.
And it has to be written in this sort of very awkward, whoever notices it and comments says, well, down on the last stanza was Henry's last post. Right. And that was over a year ago. And it's like, I don't know. So there were just some hinky things in it. I sound much more negative about this story right now than I actually was when I was reading it. I thought it was a charming story. I found it engaging while I was reading it. I always like a, what if the folktale is real and is continuing and is like functioning in the modern world, and that paired with this hyper modern, you know, online annotation comment section. I think that's super cool. It had some technical issues.
Yeah. There's an aspect to this that really reminds me of, is it the Glass Hotel? The Emily St. John, one about time travel.
Yeah, I think it's the Glass Hotel.
Yeah. And it, like, it's kind of all over the place, and then it kind of comes together, and it's kind of like, this was a weird way to go about it, but, like, okay,
we got
like
there.
Like, you know, like we got there. And
yeah.
So there are really interesting and cool bones to the story that I, mm-hmm. that I really, really like. And, it just, I don't know, it felt like, I needed to be told how to eat it, and it was complicated, and I was just hoping for a burger.
Sometimes you just want a burger.
Yeah.
That you know how to eat.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say I'm of kind of two minds about it, but I am impressed with, you know, some of these commenter characters were more successful than others, but I am impressed with how much characterization she was able to get into these purely comment-based online characters.
Right.
Like, I really did, I felt like I was annoyed with her, but I had a sense of Rihanna Anonymous. I felt like I knew Dynamom the best by the time we got to the end of this.
Yeah.
I was interested in Henry Martin's story. I think we got kind of a sense of who he was, but he was there kind of as like, as researchers sometimes go into these forums about something they're really interested in. So I thought that there were some characters that I was like, actually, this is really impressive that you've managed to do this in this format.
Yeah. I think, and you know, maybe it's just sort of like a, you know, it is what it is, where it's just like, she did such a good job capturing what internet forums are kind of like,
mm-hmm.
that it's a little unpleasant because she really captured what internet forums are kind of like. And it, you know, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but I just, you know, I find something really funny about how well something is executed detracting from how enjoyable it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she did an incredible job, especially with just some of the like inane comments that make their way into internet forums. And you're like, did you need to take the time to sit down and type that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that you
And the
did.
Whole like Barrow Boy thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's funny, but it's also, and like it's an aside, but it just, it's one of those things that like, I feel like went on a little bit too long, which is exactly right for internet forums.
Yes. Yes. It. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's a reason that I you know, tease my wife about going, you know, so far down into internet comments, because it's just like, how do you do this and stay sane? but yeah, this, as much as I was down and still down on the story, it's much more about the delivery of it than the actual story itself. Like, I really, really like the actual story itself. This is much more like the how I'm consuming it was just, it felt more like getting through it than just enjoying it.
So let me ask you this, because this is a question that I have been mulling over, and I don't know where I land on this, right?
Yeah.
Is this a story that you could take the bones of this, like take essentially what is here and blow it out into a novel where you have people interacting in real life and you kind of like dip in and out of the comment section, and maybe we're following Henry or following these people, two of them get together in real life and try to find Henry, like I don't know what the actual story is, but is this so wrapped up in the packaging that it's in now that it just has to exist like it is, or could you?
I mean, I think it would be relatively straightforward. I feel like there are novels and other things that I've consumed that are not unlike this.
Yeah.
I feel like Sherlock did some things like this like, I want to say it was some, you know, some online forum type things that like worked out okay on screen.
Like yep.
It kind of has that feel. And I think that it is something that you can do. There is an aspect of the forum being I don't think you could have the forum being anywhere near as large a part of like a bigger story.
It almost feels like you would use it, if I were going to do this, I would probably use it as the sort of like, are they epigraphs? I always forget what the actual term is, but like at the beginning of the chapter, you know, where you pull from something, I feel like that would be, honestly, that would make it feel like just a regular ass thriller, I think. Because this is what almost all modern thrillers do, is pull out some sort of like text message history or internet forum history or something like that, and you could blow it out that way. I think you'd have to make the story itself more interesting at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think you'd have to make the story more interesting, but I don't think it's that hard.
Yeah.
I think that there are a bunch of characters that you could make very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to a certain extent, I am completely blanking on her name, but the person in Gaul that...
Oh, Jenny.
Yes.
Who may or may not be the woman from the song.
Right, but, like, you could just have her be, like, a very compelling main character.
Yes. Yeah, and that would be cool. She's got this, like, dopey college kid researcher coming in. Yeah, I think that could be cool. I don't know. I'm interested. Like I said, I like the premise, the underlying premise for the story that we get here. I think that sort of folklore brought to life catnip for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. But speaking of internet forums.
It's weird that we have, like...
Yes.
Granted, in DIY, it is not, like, quite so front and center.
It's very different.
But it is a major part of the story.
I think that both of these are dating themselves because of how they interact with internet forums.
Mm.
And it's something that I always find, like, an interesting tidbit in media when you have something that necessarily dates a story. And I think we talked about this. There was a horror short story that was a Tesla in it. And so, like, yes, that's still a thing, but that probably won't always be, that won't be, like, the tech bro thing to have.
Right. Yeah. So you're going to be, which might be, like, exactly, you might want to date it specifically, right?
Right.
Like, that might be great, but you have to be aware of what you're doing. So can you talk to me then, like, I'm not deep in the forums ever. Can you talk to me about what you're seeing that you feel like does date these specifically?
So just how people interact on internet forums it's prescient now, but I think it's more of a snapshot, whereas like gaining enough points on a forum to do something and to like be taken seriously and stuff like that was the point of Barrel Boy like marking things a stretch. That feels very and sometime in the last decade, because like there was a point in time, and I think it's a bit of Reddit, a bit of a bunch of other things, where like if you're too new to a forum, you don't get all of the perks of participating in that forum, and you're not taking it seriously, stuff like that. So that's where it sort of felt that way in Where Oaken Hearts Lie. In DIY, it's a little bit more of the, I think it's a more recent joke, but like, you know, it may be just something that like I am more familiar with, which is just like, if you make a mistake online, it's sort of the best way to have it corrected.
Yes.
Like if you want to proofread something, put it up online and you'll have tons of people comment, not always correctly,
right.
But like, so this method of doing something badly and having a whole bunch of people, sorry about that,
somebody, I think we have a cat
decided
toy
to play
going
with a toy that he never plays with,
of course. Now is the time.
Now is the exact right time to play with it.
I've heard this idea that like crowdsourcing from a forum, like if you actually ask the question, nobody will answer.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you present like a completely inaccurate something, people can't wait to correct you. I think the sort of basic outline of this story is we have Noah, who is a kid who is always sort of, we're in this world where there is like endemic drought. Corporations seem to be running the world.
And corporate magic.
Yeah. This is like, there is magic. There are wands. And so we have this kid, Noah, who wants to go to the
Ozymandias
Academy. He applies again and again and again and again throughout his childhood. Like that's the beginning of this story. And we learn he has sort of severe asthma Yeah. His family is incredibly poor, but he wants to go, and he sort of starts gaming. He tries to game the system specifically around this water shortage, and gearing his application towards, like, hey, like we all wrote our internship applications when we were in college.
Yeah.
Hey, I see you're working on water. I, too, would like to work on water.
I mean, to be fair, that is how basically everything works.
That is true. Yes. But. Yes. So. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then we fairly quickly get Manny as the other main character.
Well, and I think before that, just like Noah does get in. He's much older. He's 15, which is wild. He's been applying for a decade.
Right.
He finally gets in. Our little force ghost comes.
Yeah, Vaemon sort of pops in and says, all right, well, like, you know, you've done all of this and finally, you know, did a little bit of somewhat interesting magic. And so we'll let you in, but here's like $5 for the $100,000.
Yeah. We don't have any financial aid for you. Tuition. Everybody should make sacrifices to be here, blah, blah, exactly. blah. And Noah turns him down.
Right.
And that's when he gets kind of hooked up with Manny.
Yeah.
Who is, speaking of internet culture, is like a vlogger.
Yeah. Like a vlogger streamer.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that sort of put this in, in a specific time and place.
Sure.
I think that we're sort of in the height of, internet TV streaming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it'll get bigger, but like that's sort of a big thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've had sort of very excited fans and, you know, for a really long time, but anyway, so those things just sort of came into, where technology is and sort of all those things, like interfacing.
Yeah. And so how does Noah get hooked up with Manny specifically?
So basically,
Noah is, Noah essentially defending,
yeah.
Zizir in, I want to get the pronouns right because that is one of the things that Noah is specifically defending.
Yes.
In the comment section of Manny's videos.
Right. And so Manny sort of does the like horror movie and like random magic stuff.
Yeah.
I sort of imagine this is like a, you know, somebody started up a podcast and just does somewhat random things.
Yep. Doesn't really have a whole lot of direction in what that channel's doing, but
exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, just does stuff that they like doing.
Yeah.
And you know, for whatever reason, Noah, you know, became interested in this and Manny has, Zizir pronouns and also is in a wheelchair. And so like, there's a whole lot of, Noah probably seeing a little bit of, you know, his, disability in somebody else and not liking that random people are picking on them.
Yeah, they're kind of misfits finding each other, which I don't mean pejoratively. I think, you know, they clearly end up having a great relationship. There's some flirtatiousness going on. They end up spending a lot of time with each other. And they sort of fall into this project.
Yes. So they basically, as a partially a thing to do, but like this is one of the things that's really important to Noah. I also think it's one of the things that's important to Manny. Like they're both interested in actually doing magic, and magic is sort of this just out of reach because it's being like the life squeezed out of it by major corporations. I think you can look at this as, you know, sort of magic is the MacGuffin. It just happens to be magic here, but like, insert like literally anything else. You could do big pharma, you could do but this is how they go with it.
It kind of seems like everybody in this world could potentially do magic. We're not in like a, correct me if you had a different impression of this, but we're not in like a Harry Potter world where you're a muggle or you're a wizard. It seems like if you could get hold of the stuff and practiced,
Yeah.
You could do some magic.
That feels a lot more the feel of this.
Okay.
I think that this does feel like there is a spectrum of ability.
Yes, I think that's true.
Like, kind of with everything. But this is much more of a, like, everybody could be a relatively competent magician. You just need to know the right things, need to be able to afford the right components and whatever else.
Mm-hmm. And the major part of that, I don't know even that this is, like, that important necessarily, but the major part of it is that you have the sort of bone, it's bone magic. So they're looking for bone fragments. That's what Ozymandias and all of the other corporations have been like, sweeping
like these
up.
Angel bones.
Angel bones, that's right. Because we have Seraphim and something else.
I think we have something else. But, you know, to a certain extent, you know, it's whatever the unobtainium is. And then, like, that seems to be some of the magic, but it's unclear if that's all of the magic.
It doesn't seem like it is, because they're clearly doing magic without much of it. I don't know.
It
doesn't really matter, I think, is the...
I think that this very much, I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and one of my problems also with the story, and it felt like this might have been some of your problem with this story, is, like, there wasn't any point in any of the parts of the story, like, there's no reason for there to be magic. It doesn't really play a part of the story, like, that it's a streamer and one of the commenters, like, it's sort of how the meet cute happens, but, like, that's a little bit more of the aspect of the story, but it kind of feels like a little bit of a hodgepodge of, let me put a bunch of different things in to that are slightly loosely connected to an okay story.
Yes, that is, you have nailed it on the head, my problem with this story. It felt like Mad Libs. It felt like we had a pretty generic story about corporations, like, problem caused by big corporations, squeezing out the little guy.
Yeah.
What's the little guy going to do? And don't get me wrong, I will eat that story up. That's fine.
Yeah.
But this felt particularly generic.
Yes.
With, like I said, a Mad Libs amount of stuff moving, just being sort of thrown in there. And I think specifically for me, what was disappointing about it is that I don't need a hard magic system, but I do need for there to be a specific reason that magic is in the story.
Yes.
And this could have been replaced by anything. So that was kind of disappointing to me. But they take on this project. They're going to solve the water crisis. And this is where they take to the internet for it.
Yes.
And craft this message that is like all of the wrong things about water, which Noah crafts. And even Manny at one point is like, I think you're going a little too far with how wrong this is.
And I think... there's no reason that this wasn't a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
I think, like, my problem as well, that this was a fantasy, more of a quote-unquote fantasy story with the angel magic. This feels like it's a short story in another book. Like, you know, somebody wrote a book and this is like 0.5 or 1.5 where like there's a short story in the world that like that there is magic doesn't stand on its own.
No, it doesn't. And
which is a little like it feels like an unfair criticism because he's just writing or you know they're just writing a story in a different world. But
but there are ways to do it where the magic feels like deeply ingrained in that world and it just doesn't. Even in a very short amount of space, and it just doesn't here. And I think part of it is the sort of like the idea that it seems to be playing. And I'm going to sound like Spencer here, and I don't like when he makes this complaint, and so I'm a little annoyed at myself for making this complaint. But it feels like the magic, this story is tropey all to hell, but the magic particularly is just like bringing a lot of weird tropes in and like saying, "Here you go. There's the platter of tropes that is this magic system." And it's like, well, I don't know. Do I care that this magic is based on angels? No, but am I supposed to? I don't know. I don't know.
So I feel like if you're going to have technology and magic in a story, there should be there should be either summon and meshing of the two.
Right.
Or there should be, like, there should be some interplay. And there didn't feel like there was any interplay. It felt like the magic isn't affected by technology. The technology isn't affected by magic. We have the technology that everybody would use. Mm. You know, I'm surprised that there was not, like, a NordVPN commercial halfway through the story.
Yeah.
You know, we could have gotten 20% off and John Wiswall could have made a little bit more money off the story.
Maybe, yeah.
But then there's just, like, and there's just angel magic. And so, because, like, it doesn't feel tied into the world. It just feels layered on top. It feels, I had just thought of it earlier. What's the bad cake frosting?
Oh, the fondant. It's a fondant.
Yes.
That is not correctly attached to the cake.
It's just there. Like,
you've got to take it off before you eat it. And
right.
That's exactly it. To continue on with the food metaphors, we have molecular gastronomy and fondant. Yeah. It's perfect. You know, and I think there would have been something so interesting. What I wanted here, I'm starting on a bunch of different paths all at once, so I'm going to try to narrow down.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about. But specifically what I wanted here was more specifics. I wanted more details about what was going on. They get the information from the internet. They build whatever they build, which is unclear. That works, that eventually catches the eye of the corporations. So it works, which is great. It catches the eye of the corporations, which bully them out of it, especially as Manny's has like zero kidneys fail and they're in the hospital and have, you know, need the money. So they sell to Ozymandias and are shocked and appalled when the corporation does not use that technology and magic to solve the problem. And so then they crowdsource it on the internet or send it out on the internet and, you know, people collectively make storms, which is great. Happy ending. But my feeling in finishing the story was like, okay, great. I'm glad that was a happy ending. I actually don't know why, like, what took this much space in the story. I can't like hang my hat on any details about the magic, about the technology, about drought.
And about, I guess
it was just sort of a goo to me.
Yeah. And I feel like that's where, if you're going to do magic, you can get as specific as you want. And it's, and like, you're never going to run into any problems of like it making sense because it's whatever you want to do.
Right. And you can do it. Like, I feel like I'm heading in my own brain off the argument of like, well, it's a short story. There's not a lot of space. You can do really specific magic really quickly. Like, there are shorthands for it.
Yeah.
It just felt like there was a lot of fluff in this story that meant that there was no concrete.
Yeah. And again, like, this feels like it's a little bit of, so the last story I talked about, like, that felt like it was a little bit burdened by how it's telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels a little bit burdened about like all of the things that it wants to cram into a story mm-hmm. that aren't the story and like have some importance, but
yeah,
it's, I, you know, I think that having representation in stories is important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And having, you know, things like people with disabilities in stories are is really important, and the struggles that they go through. But I feel like some of that is getting in the way of telling a different story. Like, we've talked a lot about in a short story, like, you only have time for certain things.
Right.
And so I think that this would have been, like, to a certain extent, I feel like with three lines, you could have made this a much better story, which is they figure out that the water that they're getting, because that's all they have access to because of the drought, is causing a lot of the disabilities that they're dealing with throughout the whole thing. And this process either helps them or doesn't. Like, it doesn't really matter if they have a happy ending or not.
Right.
But that's the thing that really helps the community, or some, you know, that there's some payoff for finding out about all of, like, the bad things that are happening to Noah.
Mm-hmm. And, like,
and Manny.
There's some of that, right? Because Noah's asthma is exacerbated by the fires and things like that. But I think that link could be much stronger. And I think, you know, listening to you talk about this, I think that what our, I'm going to find his name because I don't want to just call him our author, John Wiswell.
Yeah.
Like, he needed the story equivalent of the sort of fashion advice of before you leave the house, remove one thing from your outfit.
Okay. Yeah.
There's just too much here.
Yeah.
And it becomes not enough of anything.
Yes. There was a critique that I brought up in a different podcast of ours, which was As the Wheel of Time Turns, where Brandon Sanderson complained about some of the TV show of Wheel of Time, where it's just like, if you have a payoff, you need to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with this was you tried to earn a payoff and there was no payoff. Like, you have a lot of things in here, and to a certain extent, there are books like this. There are short stories like this where just, like, stuff happens, and there's no sort of rhyme or reason. There's no payoff, but, like, there was a little bit too much of a payoff for that story.
Yeah. I think,
like,
I think that's, I think, right. For what actually, like, happened here.
Yeah. Like, for there to be so much of a kid doesn't get into magic school, proves magic school wrong, but, like, ends up having to, like, sell out. I mean, that's the bones of the story, but, like,
which is,
nothing resolves in the right way.
Fine. Like, it just, yeah,
it just sort of mashes all into, like, parts of a story, and it doesn't feel cohesive.
Yeah, I also, like, I don't know, I wish I had copied and pasted this into Word so I could actually do the word count right now, but, like,
it's a lot of words.
Well, I think, it's a lot of words. It took a long time to read. But the thing, I think that it was too heavily weighted onto the Ozymandias Academy bit.
Yeah.
I actually think you could have cut all of that out. I think that's the thing you might have been able to have removed. I mean, there were many things you could have removed. But, like, I don't know that it really matters that Noah applied to Ozymandias so many times. Like, I guess it gives him a motivation, an additional layer of motivation later, but I don't think it's necessary, and it doesn't really come up again.
I mean, it sort of comes up at the end because it's the dude from the academy. Like, you do kind of get the resolution. I'm gonna continue with food metaphors,
please do,
because that's what we're here for today.
Yeah.
This is when you, like, you're making any sort of sauce, and you put all the ingredients in, and you don't let it sit and cook for 3 to 4 hours.
Oh.
There's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it might make sense eventually.
Everything's still raw in there, and it doesn't really hang together.
It's just not there yet.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. And you know what? To go back to where sort of the question I was asking at the end of the first story about, like, okay, but what if we expanded it? This actually feels like something, I'm not sure I would love the story, period, but this feels like something that should have been a novel. Like, there was so much in here.
Yeah.
That it almost felt like we were reading the cliff notes of a novel.
Yeah.
I don't think I would like it necessarily, but I can see a world in which maybe the magic system was explained if you actually had the space. Maybe we understood the the significance of the angels and the angel bones. Maybe.
Yeah.
We knew more about the academy and its place in the world. Like,
this also kind of feels like it could have been a novella that got cut down, and it should have maybe been a novel, but, like, the cutting just didn't quite.
Yeah. It's like,
whatever.
BJ, you know this as a researcher who goes and gives presentations places. Sometimes you just have to hit the word limit or the time limit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just cutting while you're sitting in the car on the way to wherever you're going. And it doesn't matter what you cut.
Yeah, it just needs to get cut. And sometimes, you know, somebody's asked a couple of questions and you just need to, like, be like, all right, well, we're going to skim over that part. but I don't know. There's an aspect that I really like about this story.
Yeah, you, before, this is another before we started the call, you yeah. were much more positive, in the same way that I think I was more positive about the first story before we started yeah. the call. You were more positive to me. So tell me what you liked about it.
I liked the feel of the read.
Okay.
Like, it was a really easy, this is like the short story version of a beach read.
Mm, okay.
Where, like, it was an easy read, nothing really happened, like, it.
You don't have to think.
I didn't have to do any work to, yeah. to from the beginning to the end. There was a beginning, a middle, and an end. Everything sort of like had logical steps. At the end, it wasn't a particularly great story, but like it was a very easy to read, not great story.
Well, at least you weren't working too hard for it.
Yeah.
There's the silver lining we come to BJ for.
Well, I guess, you know, that's sort of part of it. And I guess this is not something I would have ever recommended.
Yeah.
That's not quite true. If this is a great recommendation for somebody in the lower double digit range of age and that likes magic and like is into this world.
Yeah.
Of
I can see that. Okay.
Posting on forums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like this, I think this makes an okay YA story.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
Like if this were in a put together compendium of stories like this, I think this would be, you know, well within like the meat and potatoes of this genre of this is like evil corporate Harry Potter knockoff kind of thing.
Sure.
Like it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as a nominated to both Hugo and Nebula feels a little weird.
It feels, that's the thing. I'm wondering, to be honest with you, I didn't particularly like the story.
Yeah.
I wonder if I would be speaking so harshly about it if we weren't reading it in this context as something
yeah.
that was cross-listed in both lists of the Hugo and Nebula
yeah.
shortlists.
I mean,
that's
I think
shocking
we get...
to me.
It's, you say shocking, but I say this is regular. Like, I'm not always cross-listed, but, like, Zombie Mothers in the Apocalypse, I had it pulled
up. I
know,
up,
but
do,
like,
we do read a lot of really just not great stories from these
like,
lists. Yeah.
Like, how is this nominated? But also, you know, there are short stories that get published every year, and you need to fill up a magazine, and some are better than others. And, you know,
I guess.
I don't know. You know, are there, I don't know that short stories are as common a medium anymore.
No, I don't think they are. I don't think a ton of people read them. I also think, it's from Pat Conroy, who writes very long books, who
yeah.
was like, I don't think I could ever write a short story. I think it's actually the hardest form to write.
Yeah.
Which I agree with. Like I have, you know, written long form. I have tried to write short stories. I think they're incredibly difficult to write. And I
yeah.
don't think there's the readership for them anymore.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think to your point, they're not as popular a medium either for reading or writing.
Yeah.
Which is a
it
shame.
Does feel. Yeah, it's a shame. And it does feel like there are some people that are really good at them.
Yes.
But I also think that like, you can't just keep going back to the same authors because they're good at it.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, you've
you know,
got to be like searching for new talent and stuff like that. And, you know, part of it
yeah.
is the industry too, because like while you can,
yeah.
you know, short stories, you can get paid a little bit of money if they appear in magazines or
yeah.
journals or whatever. It is extraordinarily difficult to get a book full of short stories published in
yeah.
comparison to a novel, which is already difficult, but like it is almost impossible to get a book of short stories published, and then there's not the readership for them either.
Yeah.
So like industry wise it doesn't really make sense for
yeah.
the vast majority
and,
of people.
I mean and other than this, the likelihood that I'm gonna pick up, you know, like, and you know, maybe this is something that we should do and just like every so often pick up some Tor Reactor magazine, you know, the places that the Hugos pull from.
Yeah.
And just be like, all right, we're going to read.
Just like a regular issue.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting. We should do that. And maybe just talk about the issue as a whole.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if they do this. In my, you know, sort of professional life, there are, you know, there are journal publications that just do like whatever is submitted, and then there are specific ones.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sort of curious, like, you know, do editors choose certain things or whatever else? So,
yeah, I mean, I certainly do. I worked on a literary magazine for years, and the selection process is super interesting.
You did a selection process. Does Tor do a like curated selection process, or is it time? Anyway,
I don't know. So. I mean, I would imagine and hope that they have editors who are doing a selection process, but some magazines are pay to play, some are like, I don't know.
Reactor, now Tor. I don't remember. Anyway.
So, but that would be fun. I would like doing that. I don't know. We talked about two okay stories today.
We did.
What's interesting, though, is that they had these crossovers with each other in sort of internet culture, which I actually thought was kind of the most successful part of, well, we talked about the problems in the first one, but
yeah,
was in some ways the most successful part of both of them.
Yeah. I think they both did an incredibly successful job of characterizing like the zeitgeist of internet forums and the internet right now.
Yeah, absolutely. That felt
somewhat
super
to
real.
The detriment of the story, maybe, but like,
yeah, you gotta be careful with that.
Yeah,
but took that, I did, like, kind of central kernel of an idea and went completely different directions with it, which I thought, was sort of fascinating. I don't know. I think that I will probably be thinking about, I don't know that I will ever think about DIY again, to be honest with you. I do think that I will be thinking about where Oaken Hearts Do Gather going forward. Partially because I think, like, as a writer, I think it's a cool form. I'd be interested to see if there is something better to be done with it, a more natural way to read it. But then also some of the ways that Sarah Pinsker really was successful with what she was doing, and trying to figure out, kind of analyze what she was doing there and how to capture some of that.
The thing that I would probably think about DIY of it as a group is, I think Harry Potter has inspired a whole lot of fiction in the same way that Lord of the Rings inspired a whole lot of fiction.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some people that just take weird stuff from it. And this feels like a very clear influence of Harry Potter.
It does.
That it's interesting to me to be living during this time where there was a big phenomenon and now people are taking it and it, like, it's being put into things that it has no business being in, but they like, and you know, I'm just speculating. I have no idea how old John Wiswell is and you know, if he's a Harry Potter fan and whatever else, I'm guessing. But
it is also like filtered into the zeitgeist so much that sometimes it's hard to tell like where the influence is clearly there, even if it's not like conscious influence. So we read some things.
We did. And we'll read more things to you about them.
I know.
And
it was fun to talk to you about these stories.
Yeah.
BJ, it helped solidify some things that I was feeling in my feelings this morning, which is great. So I think next time we're going to do another short story. Is that right?
Yeah. I think we'll do some more of the backlog in the Hugo Nebula Fantasy World short story amalgam.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we'll do a couple of those since we're sort of, we lagged a little bit, and probably rope Spencer into one of them. There's some,
the triumphant return.
Yes. The triumphant return. I think that there's another Naomi Kreitzer, somewhere. There are some fun ones, and I feel like we always come together on, this was a fun one and it's mostly just lighthearted and whatever. And I am disappointed that there isn't more of that in the short story, especially in the short story space. Because I feel like it's a lot harder to write a novel without something happen, like some difficulty that needs to be overcome.
Yes. Yeah. And that
but in
has
a short
to be
story.
Like, enough to pull you through a novel. In a short story, you can actually just have something sort of charming.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to do that next time. I think we'll also get to another crossover episode with writering. I mentioned Pat Conroy very briefly in this in this episode. That is because Pat Conroy is on my brain. So we're going to do another Southern writer, obviously. Another very Southern writer. And we'll be back in a couple of episodes with that one.